is PRN. PRN for the Progressive Radio Network.
And welcome to another Sunday edition of Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky coming to you from the bright and sunny, warm area of Illinois. And what we're looking forward is a very, very interesting show tonight. And we're very, very lucky because for everybody in the military and everybody that served, we understand Memorial Day is a very, very important day. So when we look at Memorial Day historically, we're going back many, many years. Again, it was put together to honor the Civil War veterans and everything that happened, and we went on. Over the years, Memorial Day has been commemorated in Washington, D.C. by Rolling Thunder, who has a very, very important portion of this. And with Rolling Thunder, what they did is all the motorcycles gather together, and then they ride into Washington, D.C. And again, these were Vietnam-era vets working together trying to ensure that all our missing in action came home and everybody got medical care and Agent Orange. Well, we're now into a new generation. We had Desert Storm, now we've got Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on to the new Memorial Day, to the new ideas and concepts that are hoped for. Denise, would you like to do your update and then introduce our guest tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to hold the Remembering a Soldier until the very end. But what I wanted to mention, keying in on what you just said, Vietnam vets have done a lot for us, and we all owe them a debt of gratitude. Getting the Vietnam Wall up in D.C., having the Rolling Thunder, which, by the way, is in Texas and Kansas right now. They go across the country picking up riders from California all the way up. They've got a central route and a southern route. The southern route goes through Texas. The central route goes up through Kansas and on up that way. They meet up in D.C. So that is in full swing right now, this week. It started this past weekend. They are traveling. They had to shut down the roads going through Albuquerque, I think. So it's a full-fledged bring them up to D.C. And I want to also point out that it's been 50 years since the Vietnam War ended. That was in 1973, if I remember correctly today. And Fort Hood will be having a recognition for the Vietnam vets and welcome them home the way they should have been. And there are supposed to be activities all through the year to celebrate the Vietnam vets. And it started over in Florida with a raceway event over in Florida that they were welcomed home and had the motorcyclists out there. Sadly, two motorcyclists died, but they are having the ride, and they ride safely. There's a lot of information on the web about that ride to the wall. If you Google that, you'll find their little website, and they should be getting sit reports up from their trip and pictures and news articles. So that's in full-fledged swing.
I think, Denise, if anybody has not participated or seen Rolling Thunder, I highly recommend it. I had the distinct honor to participate in one of the Rolling Thunder some years ago, along with Denise. And Denise, I mean, during the Vietnam War, you were providing medical care at Wilford Hall, weren't you?
Yep, I came in, I got in during that time. My brother served over there in the Air Force at Tonsonute during Tet of 68. And so I was going through college and getting the reel-to-reel tapes from my brother over in Vietnam. And I followed his footsteps into the Air Force. My brother, the other brother that's died, was a Marine. And he didn't serve over there. He did get in the exposed bases that, you know, we'll talk about sometime in the future about Lejeune and Pendleton.
Yeah.
He spent time at both those bases. And I'm fully convinced that my brother, who was a middle child, who was a football player, strong, athletic, that this hit him without warning, and it was very quick and within the year. So we remember our Vietnam vets. They're our brothers, our sisters. Yes, you served. I served during that period. and those that served in Desert Storm, and then forward into our war on terror, or whatever they're calling it right now. But the person I lined up, and we kind of switched the timing. We were going to have him next week, but I don't know if he's online yet. But Scott Stump, who's one of the Gulf War vets, have stepped forward trying to get us a national memorial in D.C. We'll be up there next week for the march. They have a big parade. And I don't know, is Scott online yet?
Denise, I sure am.
Good. Scott, would you introduce yourself of where you served when you came in and what you did in the Gulf War and what you're up about getting this national memorial for us?
I sure would. Thanks so much for having me, Denise, and everybody else. It's truly an honor. I was just kind of a nondescript guy, kind of did my job in Desert Storm. I was actually had done my active duty time and was actually on reserve status when I was called to active duty during Desert Storm Desert Shield in November of 1990. I was with a Marine Corps unit. It's actually out of Illinois, so you all may be familiar with it, but it's now been transferred over into Indiana, but it was out of Danville, Illinois.
Wow, hey, you know, with this, I'm broadcasting from Champaign, Illinois right now.
This is Doug Roeke, who does all of our work on depleted uranium, Scott.
Well, that's kind of interesting because we actually flew back into Champaign, Illinois in April of 1991. So definitely some familiar country there.
What unit were you with?
We were actually part of the 3rd Battalion, 24th Marines. It was actually, at that point in time, it was a golf company, and it was on Wilkin Road in Danville, Illinois, right on the dam that they have there on the lake.
Scott, you're probably not going to remember this. When we were going to mobilization and everything back in the summer of 1990, I was part of the 4th Army CAT team, the Candier unit, and taught you guys updated on nuclear, biological, chemical warfare.
I do remember that. I've been blessed with a very good memory, and sometimes that's to my detriment.
And when you served over in theater, tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. What we basically did is we were an infantry unit, and we had a various, all kinds of different assignments, going from guarding a top secret air base. It was at Bahrain. It was by the name of Al Shakiz. I think it's pretty well known now, where they're running sorties out of, as well as up and down the coast of Saudi Arabia and some various installations there, providing security, doing some combat patrols, so forth and so on. And it was just surreal, and it's very hard to believe that it's already been 21 years ago.
Yes. And so we bring it up current, and y'all went down, I think, when Bush did his memorial down at Texas A&M, and I started hearing about y'all a little bit before that of wanting to get a memorial going.
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly correct. There's a contingent of several of us from our unit that I believe there are four of us and one of the wives, and we're actually able to go to that reunion. Actually ended up having a little private meeting with the president, and it was really interesting. And prior to that reunion in Texas, we kind of got to talking, several of us, and we 20 years went really quick, and we got to thinking that so many of the kids today don't even know what Desert Storm is. In fact, at one point in time there was a very popular pop song by the name of Desert Storm, and for some reason that whole period of time was getting lost with today's young people. Anybody that was born after, say, 1990, 1991, just don't even realize what it is or how it fits into history. And Denise, what we felt was important were really three things. Number one was to remember those almost 400 men and women, because there are 15 women that perished in Desert Storm. We have to remember them. Secondly, we believe that we have to commemorate the almost 700,000 servicemen and women that did serve in theater. We think that's very important. And then thirdly, we feel that it's very important to remember the historical place that Desert Storm sits in, and that is wedged in between Vietnam as well as what's going on today in Afghanistan as well as Iraq. And I really firmly believe that if it were not for Desert Storm, our country would not have exercised some of those demons of the way we treated the Vietnam folks. If it weren't for Desert Storm, I really don't believe that the men and women today would be treated with the dignity and respect that they command if it were not for Desert Storm. So those are the three focus points that we really feel strongly about.
I will remember all my life of coming back in through Westover Air Force Base and the welcome that the Massachusetts Vietnam Vets organized. And it was organized at other places, but Westover, I think, was one of the biggest places, welcoming us back home.
It's a complete different, because I know when I came back from Vietnam finally for the last time in June of 71, we flew into, obviously we left over there, and then we flew to Okinawa. From Okinawa, we flew into Hickam, which is in Oahu in Hawaii, and then I called my cousins that lived right there. From there, we went on to San Francisco, and from San Francisco, you know, we landed there at the Air Force Base, and then I got a hop down to San Francisco, and I flew into O'Hare, and that was slightly less than 24 hours after my last combat mission. And then from Desert Storm, we got done, and I had to go to Pagonis and report to him, and we got done, and Pagonis said, hey, you can leave, and they took me to Bahrain. From there, we went to London, London to Atlanta, and then, hey, I was home here again in Illinois.
So, you know, and bringing in Rolling Thunder, that group, that Vietnam veteran group that got the wall going, and then the group that started Rolling Thunder, and I know quite a few of them, and Top Holland, rest in peace, he was one of the original founders of Rolling Thunder, and that they come into town, and I have been up there many, many times during Rolling Thunder and always find my Gulf War vets kind of wandering haplessly through the crowd, wanting to connect with their fellow veterans, and have thought many years since I think my first trip up there for Rolling Thunder was around 90, gosh, I'm trying to remember, it was probably 96, and I got to speak at the end of their rally at the, right there at the reflecting pool, and it's grown since then, and so, you know, we have to thank our Vietnam vet brothers and sisters, husbands, wives, everybody that served and have made a step. And the Vietnam Wall went up, and then they said Korea's been left out. So they got the Korean Monument up. And to be there and hear the motorcycles and ride on them or be in the crowd across the bridges and go by the Marine that holds that salute the whole time of all the motorcycles coming in. They fill up the North and South Pentagon parking lot. It's just amazing, amazing display of we're not going to leave anybody behind. It was organized to remember the POW/MIAs. And so our newest group coming forward, and I have to compliment you, Scott, and your small group that got together. And tell us what's going on with getting a monument up there for the Gulf War.
Sure. I sure will, Denise. We've picked up quite a bit of steam since then, and we're actually at the tail end of the, I like to call it the end of the beginning on the legislative process. We're working with a great guy who is a representative out of Tennessee's 1st District by the name of Phil Rowe, and he is actually a former Vietnam-era flight surgeon, and he is our congressional liaison and is going to be introducing the legislation this week. I've been told either on the 29th or 30th, I believe, is when that's going to actually be, the legislation will be dropped in Congress, and everybody across the country should start hearing quite a bit about it after that point. But we're really excited to get through this initial phase of getting the legislation crafted, written, and then presented to Congress.
I'm going to mention that Congressman Rowe also supported us this year on our Gulf War illness funding for CDMRP for the Gulf War illness research. And he is a doctor, so having him on board is very instrumental to us. And I just can't thank him enough for getting fully involved in not only for the Gulf War illness research and trying to get us answers. And he's getting it, of how sick a lot of our vets are. And we have estimates 1 in 4 to 1 in 3 that are ill. Claims have been put in, going through the claims race at the VA, and the illness is taking people as we go along. So we're losing quite a number of our vets in all age groups, and it's just not right. And this hopefully will add some steam to the whole situation. So tell us about the process so far and where y'all are thinking about the monument going up, and what's the time schedule, if there's a timeline yet. I know it's all still coming into play.
Sure. Well, where we're at now, we are actually going to be working with the National Park Service once this legislation gets dropped. We're going to go ahead and work with the National Park Service to identify, they've said there's going to be 3 different parcels that they're going to present, and then we would have to have some of the folks on our board go in person and determine which one of the 3 is the most suitable. It's going to be in Area 1 or Area 2, and as you know, unfortunately, there's been a moratorium on any type of building of new monuments on the mall. So it's not, at least at this point, doesn't look like it's going to be right on the mall, although, you know, you never can count that out. But it looks like it's going to be in Area 1 or 2 is where they're going to construct that. We also feel very, very fortunate, too, that we have an architectural firm that's out of Indianapolis, Indiana, by the name of CSO. And they've been instrumental in donating all of the architectural work and renderings for what the memorial is eventually going to look like. They've donated that at no cost. So we're just really excited about that as well.
Is there some place where, Scott, is there some place where people can go onto a website or get an idea of what this is going to look like or how they can help?
Yes, sir. That's a great question. We don't have anything in terms of a rendering yet because we've had to do this in steps, starting with the legislative end of it. Once that gets kicked into gear this week, we should be able to start work in earnest on what the memorial is going to look like based upon input that we've had across the country from numerous Desert Storm vets. But we do have a website. And the website would be the best place to make contact with us. And it's real simple. It's nationaldesertstormwarmemorial.org. So just nationaldesertstormwarmemorial.org.
They also have a Facebook page.
That's exactly right. Thanks for pointing that out, Denise.
So that is there on the Facebook to get in touch with them, to stay in touch with them. And I'm hoping that it goes the same way as the Vietnam Wall Memorial did with a competition for designs. The Vietnam Wall, as we all know it, is one of the most visited places in the District of Columbia, all hours, day and night. I've been there day and night many times, and the traffic never stops going through that wall area.
Well, I think Top was there, had a booth right there to ensure everybody knew where the information was and could visit their loved ones on the wall. If I remember the times you and I shed tears up there together, Denise, isn't that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And the booth, you know, sold things to keep their effort going for Rolling Thunder. There was probably 3 to 4 booths, and they had T-shirts, and there was a hoopla about not having T-shirts. So it's changed through the years of what's there and what's not. Right now they're building the Vietnam Educational Center. So there's a lot of construction around the area for that, where there's going to be a lot more education going on. The Vietnam veterans very definitely stepping up and saying, we also need a place besides walking by this huge black wall with the names of those that died, and each year more names are added to it. But having an educational center there to teach education with all the school children that go up there on tours, they're constantly in and out of that wall area. I'm hoping that there's some way that we can get it close to the Korean Wall, the Vietnam Wall, the World War II. There's a need to keep that area as a veterans area. And I know that they ruled many years ago the mall was closed for anything else, but you know, we can always hope and wish and pray and write letters and see what we can do. But I hope that all the veterans, no matter what war they served in, whether peacetime or not, come together in helping us make this become a reality. Because, like I said, I've been up there several times during Memorial Day and Veterans Day, and I find the Gulf War vets walking around with a chocolate chip top of them, and, you know, I'm always going up to them and connecting with them. But they need a place that's theirs, that's close with all the other veterans.
Now, Scott, one of the things that's happened, I know, for both Denise and I, because we have loved ones around the wall there, that wall has been a place where mementos have been left by family members and everything else, and, you know, and our brothers and sisters and everybody over and over continuously. Now, is that something that you're thinking and considering building in also with this new memorial?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think at this point we're really open to suggestion. The architect CSO, they've been very good in eliciting feedback from the veterans in terms of what they want to see. I mean, there are so many unique components with Desert Storm. For instance, talk with a gentleman who is out in Hawaii, and he is at the USS Missouri Memorial, and they actually are talking about possibly coming up with one of the anchors from the Missouri, you know, for part of the Desert Storm Memorial, which a lot of people, you know, associate that with the surrender of the Japanese at the end of World War II. But there's just so many intricate, you know, connections between the other conflicts, Vietnam as well. So we want to incorporate as much of that as possible to have something, as Denise said, to have a place where folks can connect, for folks to remember those that didn't come back. And I think it's real easy when you look back 20 years. You know, history has a way of kind of whitewashing itself and sanitizing itself, and it looks like everything was just fit right into place. But if you remember right, back during Desert Storm, nobody had any idea what was going to happen. There was a huge casualty projection that people really felt was going to happen and become reality, and thank goodness that never happened. And, you know, but our thoughts are that even if it was one person who was killed in action, they need to be remembered.
I think one of the things, and with Desert Storm, because I was at MedCom headquarters and totally involved in all this planning that you've talked about, you know, we ended up with less than 1,000 actual casualties proper during Desert Storm. So we had, you know, as far as wounded in action, I think it was, and killed in action, was less than 1,000. A lot of them were friendly fire, unfortunately, that I had to clean up.
Correct.
But what has happened with Desert Storm since then, just like what we're seeing with Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom and New Dawn, is the disease and non-battle injury casualties are just incredibly high. So when we look at the latest reports from the Department of Veteran Affairs, we're really looking at over 300,000 disease and non-battle injury casualties now from Operation Desert Storm, and obviously we've had the families have been affected, and we've talked about that last radio show. And now with Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, we're already at over 750,000 disease and non-battle injury casualties, and 15% of the active duty Army right now is non-deployable because they're on medical profile. So these casualty numbers are something that everybody really needs to understand and see and understand, and it's not just the immediate casualty, but it's a long-term casualty that we're dealing with.
What a great point that is, because people do tend to forget that, and that's something that isn't popular to bring up, but it's reality, and it needs to be addressed. And you so eloquently did address that. I mean, you know, the unseen consequences of a conflict or a service member's participation in a conflict, you know, sometimes isn't felt for decades, you know, till decades later.
Right, and the Agent Orange was several years ago. But they finally got a plaque right there by the wall, off to the side of the three combat men, off to the side, and a lot of people don't know this, don't even know to look for it, but there's a plaque there recognizing those that have died since the war from the Agent Orange.
So Denise, you lost two in your family from Agent Orange, didn't you?
Well, one, for sure. Probably others, but had a large family, had cousins and all. But, you know, so I hope that all these factors are remembered of what we went through with the Vietnam Memorial and the Agent Orange coming up and having at least a plaque in the ground. There needs to be more of a recognition of that. Then we had the nurses' monument years before that. In fact, it was being dedicated, on the first year that we had the hearings in November of 93 for Gulf War illness on the Hill, the very first hearings. That was the year they were dedicating the women and nurses a memorial that's, you know, right there across from the Vietnam Wall. So we're hoping that all the elements are considered ahead of time this time, so it's not added on, you know, as we go, but a whole complete idea is formed. And I want to mention, I don't have the book handy, I was just looking for it, I should have pulled it out, but we changed due to this week. But there's a book written by a Vietnam veteran's wife mentioning all the memorials on Gulf War throughout the country. And one of them I want to mention is getting going now is the High Ground in Wisconsin. If you Google that, you'll see that they're doing a Gulf War Desert Storm addition to their area, and that's going on currently. So they've had their artists rendering and are actually, I guess, breaking ground and doing that. So there are monuments. I found one as I was traveling from Denver to Kansas City at Junction, Kansas, at their little town square. So there's memorials kind of scattered out through the country, just like with Vietnam and World War II, that people are not well aware of. But this Vietnam veteran's wife documented the memorials that were across the country in a small paperback book. So I'll have to bring that up in a future show, maybe next week. But besides talking about the monument, Scott, let's talk about the big parade that you're going to be participating in.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Denise. We're really excited and looking forward to the Memorial Day Parade, of course, this coming a week from this Monday up in Washington. And there has never been a contingent of Desert Storm veterans involved in the parade. And I was working with a gentleman by the name of Wes Smith, who is in charge of the operation putting together the parade, and he actually formally invited all Desert Storm veterans to be a part. And we would love to extend that invite, you know, to anybody, any of the Gulf War, you know, Desert Storm vets that want to participate. We would love to have you. And of course, this is kind of symbolic too of kicking off the legislative aspect and really getting this memorial going. The timing couldn't be better. So we would love to have anybody that is willing in the Washington area or that wants to travel there. I'd be more than happy to leave my my contact information with you, or I can even leave you.
I have that contact info, but can you tell us which day it's going to be on and the time that it's going to be?
Yes, it's going to be on Monday the 28th. The parade starts at 2, however, we're going to assemble at 1 o'clock, and if anybody is just, you know, hearing this and they just wanted to show up, we're actually, our marker is number 81, and it's right there, going to be easy to, you know, easy to spot us. We would just be thrilled to have anybody, any of the vets, heck, we'd even you know, welcome any of the family members of folks maybe that have lost loved ones in the conflict. Anybody is welcome.
I wanted to get you on today because I talked to you and you said we've got maybe 20 to 50. And I said, well, if we get you on today a week before, maybe we could get people driving in from Pennsylvania, Indiana, Ohio, New Jersey, you know, the ones that can make the drive and get in there and be part of this.
Scott, do you have direct contact numbers? How do people that want to participate in the parade get in contact with you? Can you give that number for them, please?
I can. It's area code 828-456-6412.
Okay, 828-456-6412.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen out there, if you're interested in participating in Memorial Day Parade in Washington, D.C. on Monday, May 28th at 2 p.m., you need to get in touch with Scott here, and helpfully, let's get some Desert Storm veterans that are in that area up there to participate in this parade. This should be very interesting.
Scott, what do you want them to wear?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. We're just trying to be as uniform as possible. Of course, you had mentioned the chocolate chip camouflage hat, or as we said in the Marine Corps and the Naval Services, the cover. You can wear one of those, white polo shirt, a pair of khaki slacks, or a lot of the guys in some of the past functions we've had like to wear the chocolate chip bottoms, so that's fine too. However, if somebody wants to show up in full uniform, that's fine too. Definitely not going to turn anybody away. So if you still fit into your old uniform, feel free to wear that as well. So I'm not necessarily worried about what anybody's wearing. We just want them to be there. That's the most important thing.
Well, you have a color guard leading in the contingent, Scott.
We don't. However, there will be a color guard, of course, at the beginning of the parade. I'm not sure exactly what our, who we're behind or in front of. But we don't at this point. However, if there's a color guard out in Radio Land that wants to volunteer, hey, we would love to have you too.
I know a VFW post right up in town that might be interested in doing that. I'll put you in touch with them.
That'd be wonderful.
Scott, where's the staging area for this so people have an idea of approximately where in Washington you're staging the parade?
Yes, sir. They are staging the parade, and gosh, if I get this wrong, I don't think I am. I think it's between 7th and 4th Street is where the staging area is. And we are, as I mentioned, number 81. 81 is our marker. We'll have that. They have it real well marked in terms of an order of that. But it's between 7th and 4th Streets.
Now, is there going to be any... got individuals that obviously can't walk or can't walk very well. Is there going to be a vehicle there or a flatbed truck, or is there any possibility, wheelchairs or however they can get around?
Absolutely. Anybody, wheelchairs, whatever. I don't believe that we're going to have a flatbed at this point. That hasn't been brought to my attention, but, it's kind of like the military. That could change. But, I don't care what anybody's physical capabilities are. If they show up and they want to be a part of it, we'll make sure that they are a part of it, whatever we have to do.
That is excellent.
And Scott, let's see. I had a question.
Sure.
And... this started kind of with the people putting together the Brickyard, the racetrack from last year, correct?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. Boy, you have a really good memory. We were really lucky and blessed to have been invited for a 20th anniversary celebration at the Brickyard on the Indianapolis 500 Motor Speedway. And we actually had a contingent of about 200 Desert Storm veterans from all across the country. Even had a few from California and so forth that participated in that. And we were able to participate in the opening ceremonies of presenting a huge flag as well as several other iconic symbols in the infield on the racetrack. But that's exactly where this started to kind of germinate, I guess you would say.
So a number of groups coming together and all pulling together to make it all come together, just like the Vietnam vets did. Those that know the history, there was a lot of different Vietnam vets, and they all came together and made things happen, and I see that happening again right now for the Gulf War vets. And I know quite a few that I got notified and know that they made it up there and helped with the flag. One of them, Brent Casey,
yes.
Whose father is,
grandfather.
His grandfather is a World War II Iwo Jima Marine, I believe it's Marine,
yes.
Medal of Honor recipient. And Brent travels around the country with his grandfather to all the Medal of Honor conventions and functions. And so he was there, and I know his grandfather was up there too. And then we had David Lachelle, an Air Force veteran that came up from Indiana. So I know I was out there passing the word, people get there. I couldn't get there, but I wanted as many as I could get notified to get there. And so we're using this program today to kind of bring together the history of what's been accomplished in this country. And, yes, we had 100 years of the Civil War being kind of people miss that, but there was a celebration of 100 years for the Civil War going on this past year. And then we have the Vietnam celebration, finally welcoming them home across the country and giving them the same welcome that our current troops got and what they organized for us coming back from the Gulf War. So what are the next steps that we can do to help you, Scott, to bring more people together working on this? We've given out the website, the phone numbers for the parade, getting the word out. And the legislation is going to be dropped hopefully next week. What an excellent time. What do you see is needed now from the vets and from the civilians out there?
Well, I think from the civilians, number one, from the veterans, we still would strongly encourage anybody that's out there that maybe they have a family member that's deceased now, maybe they actually served themselves. We still want to get as much info in terms of what should be included in the memorial, what they think are the important things that need to be stressed. Because as you said, Denise, we don't want to have to go back and retrofit some of these things after the fact. We want to be as inclusive as possible. So I would say number one is that anybody that has that desire to give feedback, to give input as far as what that memorial needs to look like, please do so. The person on the street, where it could be really helpful is to spread the word. People need to know about this, and I think that there is going to be kind of an initial media push on Capitol Hill. Congressman Rowe has basically mentioned that that's probably going to be something that's going to be pretty popular, especially in an election year. There's going to be a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that want to be involved in this because it's a nonpartisan. This is a non-political issue. This is something that, as you had mentioned, is a history of our country, and it needs to be done. So we don't see that there's going to be a big pushback from anybody politically on this. But just getting that word out, letting people know that this is happening. Anybody that maybe works in a large corporation that is charitable in nature, obviously this is something that doesn't get done by itself. We've got to have people behind us, people that are willing to donate funds, because we chose early on, right off the bat, we said that we wanted to do this completely private. So this is not accepting. We're not accepting any federal funds. We're not having any taxpayer money for this. This is all going to be done by private funding.
Exactly, so the way the Vietnam veteran did theirs. And I was just going to ask you, have you started a financial situation where people can donate to the memorial?
Denise, great question. Yes, people can donate, and they can do that on our website. There's some information on how they can donate. We do have the 501c3 has already been established. It's there, and we're ready to start accepting funds at this point. Because, as you know, not only has the cost of things gone up in the 30 years since the Vietnam Wall was erected, but there's always incidental costs that are involved in taking on something like this, of this nature. All of the board members, anybody on any of the committees, is strictly volunteer, so nobody is taking a dime to do this. This is strictly a volunteer force. And I feel real lucky, too, that our board is constructed of folks from all, all of the demographic states, all of the ethnic categories. I mean, we have a really well-established, group of folks, because we feel it's very important to be inclusive and get as much diverse input as possible, because this is for our country. This isn't just about, any of us individually. It's a lot bigger than that, and we really feel great about who we've got that's giving that input. But any input out there is always welcome.
Do we have any of the leadership of the Gulf War involved currently in touch with you even? I think about Storman, I think about Pagonas, I think about Horner with the Air Force. Have you heard from any of these people, or have you heard from Ross Breaux, who has been so dedicated to the Gulf War veterans that are ill?
You know, that's a great question, too, Denise. we basically started an outreach early on, and I think a lot of these folks, you know, we've talked with Secretary of State Baker. He was kind enough to give some remarks to the veterans last year at the Brickyard. But I think a lot of these folks are really kind of taking a kind of standing back and making sure that this is something that's for real. And I guess I can't blame them for that. You know, it's really easy to talk about something. It's a lot harder to do something. And I think once this legislation gets dropped, I think they're going to be a lot more receptive and willing to jump in there and you know, pitch in. I have gotten some word. I've been contacting a gentleman who was, I believe, the S5 on General Franks's staff, and General Franks knows about this through him. He's 110% behind it. He's very supportive, at least verbally. And then the other gentleman who has I've had some face-to-face as well as contact over the phone is General Boomer, who, you know, who is in charge of all the Marines in theater. Very, very supportive, and has been a very good sounding board for some of the things that we've done. But we really hope that you know, we can include some of the senior leadership, because we feel it's important to have their input as well.
Right. Well, there's 7th Corps that I'm not sure when their annual dinner is. I'd have to pull up their website, but they have an annual dinner. So 7th Corps does that up in D.C. They have an office, and I'll get you in touch with those people if you have not been in touch with them. We just need to all combine and make this happen. And I think about the Vietnam Wall and the effort that it took, and it was Vietnam vets coming together, and it's become the gathering place. It's one of the events every year at Memorial Day and Veterans Day and other days throughout the year, of where they come and present the wreath to the wall, have speakers, entertainers, you know, just a mixed group, you know, entertainers, leaders from the Vietnam wall, different, you know, whole different groups of people, not politics, but, you know, recognizing what happened and how we need to remember these people. We have know on Father's Day, the children of the Vietnam vets go up there and wash the wall. So it is a place to call home in our national capital. I also, when I first went to D.C., you know, knowing the Vietnam vets, Top Holland, Nick, who was great at networking me in with everybody, but I discovered the little World War One D.C. memorial. It was a D.C., it wasn't a national. And our last World War One vet died, and I know the person that worked very heavily documenting the last World War One vets, and the push to get that monument cleaned up, restored, is going on now. And it's a shame that it happened after all of them have died. And there is a national memorial in Kansas City for them, and there was some discrepancy there, you know. But it's really important to have it in D.C. The Smithsonian, pulling people up there, you know, having school children learn the history, having a place for the families and for the veterans to come together. Doug mentioned about the things left at the wall. Those are all collected, and they're in a huge warehouse. They have displays of them over at the Smithsonian occasionally of what's been left at the wall. So, you know, it's a living history that people visit in our nation's capital. And I am so delighted to have connected with you and look forward to meeting the others that pulled together, because I've been watching you ever since you surfaced.
Could we just do a little summary here?
Sure.
So, Scott, I guess this is going to be called the National Desert Storm War Memorial. And that's, again, the website, nationaldesertstormwarmemorial.org. The legislation is going to be introduced in Washington this next week.
That's correct.
And so then how do we need to, obviously, we're going to have a lot of sponsors. Once
yes,
it's introduced, how do we go about getting additional congressmen and senators to sign up as sponsors for this?
Well, that's a great point. I think that the number one way, hopefully, you know, they're going to hear about this. I think Congressman Rose already mentioned there's several that are kind of waiting in the wings. He has somebody, one of the senators from Arkansas is evidently interested in taking it up in the Senate. But any of the listeners that you may have out there who would want to call their own representatives and make them aware of this, obviously the quicker they're aware of it, the quicker they can jump on and co-sponsor and move this along. I guess that would probably be a good starting point right there.
Do you have the will you have a copy of legislation posted on your website?
I'm sorry?
That legislation will be posted when it's introduced, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. We will have that posted on the website once it is introduced.
Well, as one that's worked the Gulf War illness bills, I'm donating my time to get that rolling, too. But it takes everybody pulling together. It takes people writing their representatives and their senators, calling them in D.C. is quicker. If you're working an issue, a bill that you need co-sponsors signed on to, you need to call D.C. and talk to their veteran staffer. That'll be the person that'll be aware of it. And express your interest in getting your congressman, your senator, on board, signed on, and recognized as being supportive of us. And that takes us all across this country, Hawaii, Alaska, everywhere, to get this rolling and get it done fast. The sooner we get people co-sponsoring, the sooner it be brought up and brought to the floor, and, you know, hopefully get it done quickly, because we got a lot of work left to do to raise funds and the design, the site selection. It's going to be a while since before it gets actually built, but getting it off the ground like this is critical, and so we'll throw our weight behind you, Scott, and help you every which way we can. And Doug, I'm going to take a minute and read on one of the ones that died this past week.
Yeah, why don't we hold up? Again, the other thing too, Scott, I want to get, again, review the parade.
Yes,
so the parade, National Memorial Day Parade, is going to be on Monday. Okay, that's May 28th. It starts at 2 p.m. And so anybody, family members or veterans or anybody involved in Desert Storm whatsoever, are invited to participate in the parade. Your marshaling area is number 81, and a phone number is, again, area code 828-456-6412. And
that's
they
correct.
Can wear whatever they have available as far as a uniform or, you know, as long as they're neat and clean.
That's correct. We're just worried about them showing up. We're not really worried about apparel. Now, if the parade organizers heard me say that, they'd probably string me up, but I'm willing to take that risk.
Excellent.
And we'll have more information, as you said, on your website, the Desert Storm National Memorial, on Facebook. And we encourage everybody to start talking about it. Get involved. That's what it takes.
And thanks so much for allowing me to come on your program and to talk about this. I can't thank you enough. And on behalf of all the board members as well as all Desert Storm veterans, thanks so much for what you're doing and how you're doing it. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, Scott, we hope you maybe make a short phone call in to us next week and let us know how it's going from D.C., because I know you'll be in D.C., so, you know, if you have more news, I think we can give you 5-10 minutes maybe next week and give us an update.
He'd be more than happy to. Thanks
yeah.
so much.
Scott, I'd love to have you come back on the program here at any time. Again, we're on now, and we'll just keep in contact, and you can give us an update every few months or whatever however you see fit. Just give us a call.
Yes, sir, I sure will, and thanks again. Thank
and
you so Scott, much for having
before
me.
Before you leave, I hope that you'll listen to my little I take out a vet that's died from the Gulf War time period each time we're on, and try to remember those that are dying now that served with us in the Gulf War. And the one today is George Stuckert, George J. Stuckert, 42 years old, of Las Vegas, and he passed suddenly. May 15, 2012. Formerly of Philadelphia, he was a Nevada resident since 1994. He served in the U.S. Navy during the Desert Storm and was a system analysis person. So we want to honor him and all the others that died through through every day, I pull them up and I list them on Gulf War Illness's Facebook page, which is another fellow Marine, David Winnett, who has not forgotten either. And he served on our Gulf War Illness Research Panel Review. He has stepped forward, been doing a fantastic job as a leader in the community, as well as so many other Marines I've met along my path, and Army and Navy and Air Force. We're all coming together.
Definitely.
Well, Scott, thank you very much. And, you know, if you want to stay on, we got a few minutes left here, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody's got any phone calls or has any questions, please give us a call. We'd love to have you call in. And that number is 888-874-4888. Again, if you want to call in and ask any questions, 888-874-4888. And our producer will put you right through. Yeah, one of the things is we're looking at also, and again, Scott, this affects both Denise and I, you know, I and everybody else, is the VA back in March released what's called their Gulf War Veterans Illness Task Force Report. And again, this is looking at all the problems that have associated with Desert Storm, because we know now we have very, very low actually killed in action and wounded in action during Desert Storm, but the casualty numbers are just staggering today as far as disease and non-battle injury. And so as we look at this, it's extremely important that we get the information identified, we get all of the claims submitted, that all the veterans that participated do complete what's called the post-deployment physical assessment form. That's a DD form, and if you haven't got it, contact us, and Denise and I, we can get it to you. But very, very important. So again, looking at what the Department of Veteran Affairs has to do and how do they need to work to provide the medical care to all the Desert Storm casualties. And as we've talked about now for the last few weeks, we're seeing exactly the same type of medical problems coming out of OIF and OEF and Operation New Dawn that we're seeing from Desert Storm. And that, for me, is very disturbing because, unfortunately, although we try to get a lot of lessons learned and change things, it doesn't appear that not a whole lot was done because, again, the casualty numbers are absolutely staggering. I think one of the things important, and Denise, you're the nurse on our team here. You got kind of adopted by Bowers Raiders a few years ago. And unfortunately, too many of Bowers Raiders, and we need to remember them, Colonel Dr. Andres Cornegie-Bach, Command Sergeant Major Jim Runge, you know, Holland, and again, the greatest of all, Sergeant First Class John Sitton. All these guys have gone up to the angels in heaven. I mean, they're all part of Bowers Raiders. But I think the main thing that we have to do right now, and you, Denise, you and I had this conversation earlier today, is we need to get the research out there to identify the biomarkers that can verify the toxic exposures or the medical problems everybody's having so that we can then develop proper treatment. And could you go a little bit more, since you're a nurse there, Denise?
Yeah, you know, for a long time, and I want to get this across, we weren't treated well, neither were the Agent Orange veterans. So history repeats itself until we hammer the issue home and get enough standing up to make a difference. But we've been battling the denial, delay, all the tactics that they used on us, saying it was stress. This was not stress. What I saw early on made the hair on the back of my neck as a nurse officer stand just straight up. And I early on started connecting over the internet and by phone and doing a kind of physical assessment, a nurse's assessment, head to toe, of how their health had been before the war. And we were all healthy. We had to be in the military. And the symptoms that were showing up. It's taken us now 20, 21 years now to finally get attention paid in the right way. Money was misspent for years, decades, okay, saying it was stress. And the research was going to stress-type research, not to what was happening to our bodies, that we have been physically damaged, poisoned by whether it be whatever cause, vaccine, the chemicals, the depleted uranium, the oil fires. I've always said I think it's all of the above.
It has to be all of the above because you can't isolate the exposures out. And the physiological effects are then synergistic in nature. And this is one of the things that we tried to stress and looked at Third MedCom headquarters from day one. But, again, the problems have been, well, can we find one cause? No, ladies and gentlemen, there is not one cause. There never has been, never will be.
And to, you know, carry it forward, it was, you know, when 9/11 came about, you know, the funding for DOD was cut, which to me made it simpler because they were spending money on deployment med, really wanting to put our issue to bed on us before they should have, before they told the truth. And the VA was misspending money. So we, you know, fought for Haley's funding, and that was a continual battle in the early years. And then we got a VA collaborative center with the UT Southwest. It was a five-year program, $15 million a year, and we were doing great. 3 years in, the VAIG shuts it down. Then we move forward of, okay, what do we need to do? We need to have some place to have good research done, pull it together, make it happen right. So in 05, Dennis Kucinich, Sanders, who had served with Shays on the Government Reform Committee, decided to take and see if we get funding through the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program. And which was accomplished with the beginning of $5 million for the first year. We've never gotten more than $10 million at any given time since the fiscal year 06 Defense Appropriations Bill. This year we asked for $25 million. We wanted an increase from the past year of $10 million because we had consortiums of universities developing. This is where we go to the civilian world, get the universities working together, get the best of the best out there. And this program versus VA, you have to be a VA researcher to get funding through the VA, okay? This program is open to any researcher, doctor, researcher, across the world. Across the world, they can, you know, hear about this. They can go to CDMRP. There's announcements that come out for them to put their letter of intent in. And this is what we've been doing since 06, and we are getting there. We're behind the curve. We need to work faster to find treatment, get them listening, and maybe trying some different treatment for us faster so we can make the quality of life better.
Well, Scott, thank you very much. Denise, thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, Warrior Connection, Progressive Radio Network, we are moving forward. Keep coming with us. Good evening.